So you can go first and then go.
Okay.
All right, we are back. Ms. Waldman, Mr. Wynn.
Actually, just a couple of housekeeping matters. First, the university was able to check with Professor Lazowska, so he's amenable to waiting for Mr. Durrott to finish his testimony in the morning.
Okay.
So we appreciate that very much. The other is we've got another exhibit here that's been marked as D28 that Ms. Waldman will be referring to. It's by way of responding to some of the testimony from Mr. Fox yesterday. So that will be coming up, and we'll address it as it comes. And if I may just, if we can then go back to the testimony of Ms. Waldman.
Yes, go ahead.
Ms. Waldman, during the break, you and I conferred about some of the exhibits that the department has put in, and I'd like to ensure the examiner is aware of them, and but without belaboring them. So let's quickly, if we can, give the examiner a tour through the others. You referred to the City University Agreement. Is that the document that has been marked D5?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And following up also on Ms. Doherty's testimony, you made reference to the rezone portion of this proposal. Are exhibits D6 and D7 correspondence that relates to the rezone component of this proposal?
Yes.
Okay. And then finally, you mentioned that this is a that SDCI is not going alone, as it were, in this, that it has been consulting with a number of other departments and agencies. And is it fair to characterize exhibits D8 through D13 as correspondence from other departments and agencies regarding this proposal?
Yes.
And do you believe that those exhibits that we've just identified speak for themselves?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I figured we could do that expeditiously, and we wanted to ensure they were in the record in case they needed to be referred to later. But as Ms. Waldman says, they speak for themselves, so we won't belabor them. Thank you, Ms. Waldman. We ended with you having discussed Exhibit D15 about open space, and I'd like you to pick up from there, please.
Okay. One of the conditions that I want to highlight in terms of the city's concern on the commitment and timing is condition number 6, recommendation number 6. And the university has in their attachment A, exhibit number.
Appendix A to our brief?
Yes. Attachment A to the university's brief has suggested that some sort of parallel wording in terms of the development sites that should be considered when the design and implementation is done, and those same sites be considered for when construction is done, that they all be considered, and adding sites W27 and W35 to the list of sites that would be completed before the West Campus Green would be completed. So that basically says the university is saying, well, these sites plus more would need to be done before the West Campus Green is completed, or the 1.5 million square feet, or I guess it's 3 million square feet, I'm sorry. And the city is saying, well, we don't think that we should add more sites to be developed in the West Campus Green before the West Campus Green is completed, because those sites in particular are not adjacent to the green, and so wouldn't impede construction of the green. So we're trying to get that West Campus Green to be completed as expeditiously as possible. And so that's the difference in terms of, I believe, of our recommendation and the university's response to that particular recommendation. So that's just to highlight one of the ways in which the city is trying to ensure commitment at the most reasonable and opportune time, both for design and for construction of the proposed open spaces. I'm going to highlight condition number 23 now. This is a condition that is discussed under the rezone analysis. And what it states is that on page 240 of the master plan, that it be amended, it just sentenced be amended so that mid-block corridors are required where identified in figures 169 and 185. And the sort of contentious part here is relabel the priority pedestrian connectors on these figures as mid-block corridors. And so I would ask, first I would point in the director's recommendation to page 50, figure 4, to show you what it is that we're looking at in terms of mid-block corridors and the priority pedestrian connectors. So the mid-block connectors are the reddish-orange lines that project, say, southwards from Pacific Street. And you'll see there's one at the far, well, I guess it would be sort of northwestern part of the South Campus. And then there's a second one 300 feet later, and there's a dimension there that was provided by the university.
Mine's all in black and white.
So oh.
Is there an exhibit? What's the exhibit number for your report?
I'm sorry.
Never mind. He's giving him. Mr.
Okay.
Wynn's giving me his.
Okay.
So, for the record, I think we're referring to exhibit D1.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That would make sense. Okay, start over again.
So
the red versus the
red. The red are the mid-block corridors. And
right.
This is in the South Campus. And you'll see that there are a total of four of them projecting from Pacific Street. And then there are the yellow arrows, or sort of yellow and white arrows, which are the priority pedestrian connectors. So the city's recommendation is that the priority pedestrian connectors be treated as mid-block corridors. And what this would do then is there would be then a development standard that there be that those be at least 25 feet in width. The priority pedestrian connectors are under the design guidelines, so it's not a requirement, it's a guideline. And they're described as being, I believe, at least 8 feet in width. Now, SDCI is particularly concerned with the block of development along Pacific and having sort of a porous and visual connection or pedestrian, at least, connection to the waterfront. And that's been described as that's something that the university is trying to attain through this master plan because, you know, we can see from the current situation there that there's a lot of improvement that can be made in the South Campus. So what this figure 4 does is it shows the dimensions among various things. So if you look at this first 300-foot dimension at the far left, I don't know, along Pacific, so that is the direction, the distance between two mid-block corridors. And then between that second corridor and the next mid-block corridor, there's a total of 605 feet, which is the 245 plus the 360. So there may indeed be some 8-foot pathway that would be provided there, but this is a 605-foot block of development that would occur there, which is about two city blocks. Then the next, between that middle corridor and the next corridor, there's a total of 800 feet. And yes, there are two proposed pedestrian connectors in there, but again, that's like an 8-foot distance, 8 feet being less than the, you know, a small alley in a residential zone. It's being actually less than probably a sidewalk width in the city. And then I think it's also important to note that the dimensions that are shown here seem to be, to me, to be far out of context in terms of eight feet is probably, may in fact be the line of one, the width of one of those lines. It's not the distance between those, the pink, the areas labeled as active edges. So we're just trying to get some development standards in order to provide some porous capability through that block of development. And that's what our recommendation is in terms of that development standard.
You just used the term development standards, and yet I thought you said before that the pedestrian connectors were guidelines, not...
Yes.
And you want them to be...
I want them to be...
Development
standards. I want them to be... we want them to be standards, and we want them to be mid-block corridor...
width.
Standards, yes.
Okay.
Now, I would say that we probably have less concern in terms of the sort of northwest-southwest priority pedestrian connectors, because that's not off of a main public street. So that's internal to the South Campus and probably would be mainly used for faculty, staff, students making their way through South Campus. It's not something that I would say that we would have a high priority in making those mid-block connectors, like standards. What we're really looking at is porous and light sensibilities and ability to at least sense the water and know how to get to the water. And then we will have the waterfront trail that lines through the South Campus and East and West Campus as well. So that discussion is placed in the rezone analysis, and it comes under zoning principles. And I'm sure, like a lot of the discussion in here, a lot of the recommendations, we first put them where we sort of first where it first fits, and we didn't try and necessarily repeat it through other parts of the report in terms of, well, if you have. This could be something that could be a SEPA condition. It could be a, some of the policy conditions, policy language, we might use it there. So we tried to just kind of plug it in where it made the most sense and not keep repeating it. So I just wanted to say that, the parts of the plan, the analysis just kind of overlaps a lot. And so we tried to make it somewhat simple. Clear, I guess. Okay. Now, I think I want to address Mr. Fox's testimony with regard to sites W22 in particular, and somewhat site W37. And so we have proposed exhibit D28. And this is a map from the city's GIS system. And what it shows is the brown parcels are owned by, I believe, by the University of Washington, according to GeoCortex, whatever system it relies on. And the sort of dashed lines, kind of square dashed line, is the boundary of the major institution? Or is it? That doesn't look right. No? That's not right. W37 is definitely in the major institution boundary, so I'm not sure what's happening there. I'll just highlight the boundary.
like your copy of it?
No objection.
Be overruled anyway.
Pardon?
Be overruled anyway.
Yeah.
You need to give me a highlight.
I'll highlight it. Anyway, John.
Maybe there's a lot of gravity.
Okay, I'll highlight it.
Oh, they have one.
I'm going to highlight it. You know where it is?
Well, why don't you go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
It's in a different spot.
Just to make sure that this is the part that doesn't seem to be matched up with the...
I think maybe it's just a couple layers, like, merging there.
That could be.
Yeah.
This is the part that matters.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Paul, do you want to do yours?
No, thank you, Ms. Waldman. I copied from the examiner's homework.
Okay.
It's getting late.
All right.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I can't explain. It probably is overlapping, yeah. Thanks. All right. So what we see is W37 and W22 were the points of discussion from Mr. Fox's testimony on Friday. W22, he said, was not at the edge of a campus boundary. And so I'd like to show, well, what you see is a sort of triangle that's basically between right-of-ways, which Roosevelt and I guess it's actually called East Lake Avenue Northeast. So that's university owned. It looks like it's just a sort of random traffic right of way, but it's actually owned by the University of Washington. So that is what is at the edge of the boundary between the MIO campus and not the MIO campus. I'd also like to point out that this is a scale of 1 to 200, and so the southwest corner of site W22 is approximately 109 feet from the property that Mr. Fox was describing, which is the apartment building at Roosevelt and what would be the extension of Northeast Campus Parkway if it extended there. I've also included the topographic data from the GIS, which shows generally that the site, the area slopes down from south, north to south. And so this is the reason why we said that site W22 is not at the edge of the boundary and that the adjacent zoning is, you know, basically not unsuitable in terms of the proposed height and the existing zoning in the area that's adjacent to it. Now, as far as W37, I think the university's exhibit.
Yeah, what's the number?
What's that number?
I don't. It doesn't have a number.
Okay.
A
33.
33.
Okay, so that shows the sort of the uphill portion of W37. At 130 feet, and then because it drops, the site drops so much, the upper slope would be limited to 130 feet in terms of the facade there. And then you can see what the distance is in terms of, because of all the right-of-way that's between that site and, again, that apartment building that Mr. Fox was describing, that's... Well, it looks like it's about 200 feet, just in terms of that's an inch or so. That looks 200 and some odd feet. So that's why we, and also with W37, because there's a viewpoint that would protect
the actual viewpoint from the bridge, we feel that it's reasonable to approve the requested rezone of W37 and then W22 as well for different reasons.
Are you moving admission?
I'm sorry, do we have this admitted yet?
No.
We would like to move to have this admitted.
No objection.
Thank you. So I think I covered both of the CUCAC recommendations that were described in testimony. Those were CUCAC recommendation 27 and 30. I'd also note that the university's response to some of CUCAC's recommendations that they were willing to do some of the reporting I think they described this morning. And although, you know, we didn't require it, we don't have any, you know, we're not opposed to them doing that, so we're okay with that as a condition. I think is what's proposed. Well, one of the minor disputes, so to speak, is about hand-carry boat launch area in the Shoreline Public Access Plan. And that comment came from Department of Ecology Review. And that was exhibit, where's that list of exhibits?
Perhaps you're referring to exhibit
Exhibit 8. That's from David Pater, I believe, from the Department of Ecology. We had asked for Ecology's response or comments on the Shoreline Public Access Plan, and that was their response. So we thought it fair that we should include that as some language within our recommendation. And I think that any sort of additional testimony, we'll have some additional testimony from Janet Scholl about some of the things I discussed briefly today, and that would be regarding sort of that design and open space elements of the plan and our conditions. So she'll be testifying tomorrow. So I think I'm done.
I have nothing further for you. Thank you.
Mr. Robin.
Thank you. I have a couple of topics to talk to you about. Probably won't surprise you that it's mid-block corridors and housing.
All right.
Let's start with the mid-block corridor testimony. Are you aware of the, you mentioned in your testimony that the distance between the mid-block corridors that are proposed is two city blocks? What part of town were you referring to when you said two city blocks?
My neighborhood.
And what neighborhood is that?
Wallingford.
Okay. Are you aware of the north-south block length in the U District?
No. This is east-west. So we're talking about east-west blocks?
You could. I suppose I would submit that along the waterfront there you're orienting. Okay. I'm going to hand you, this is going to be a cross-examination exhibit. Unfortunately, I only have two copies at the moment. We'll get you more. This is the U-District Urban Design Framework. I'm going to ask her a question and submit it into the record, and I'll get you a copy, Roger. If you want to look at my copy, you're welcome to.
Thank you.
you please flip to page 10 of that document?
This will be marked when I get it as Exhibit 34,
A34. And if you would, take a minute to read block configuration, that section entitled block configuration, to yourself. And tell me when you're finished. So, according to the U-District Urban Design Framework, what is the block length in the U-District?
Well, they seem to vary between 220 feet and 700 feet.
Mr. Wynn's got my copy, so.
Thanks. Well, block widths. Well, there's widths and there's lengths, sorry.
Okay. Well, so you're getting to both of my questions. So the widths range from, would you agree with me, it says 220 long from east to west, and then on the north-south it ranges from 500 to 700 feet?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Madam Examiner, do you want a copy? Do you want that copy now, or do you?
Are you finished with
it? I'm finished with it.
Okay, yes.
I can.
Marked as Exhibit A34.
I don't know what that is. I think it's
Okay, so on the topic of housing,
excuse me, are we going to move to admit that?
He hasn't yet. I'm looking for page numbers. Okay, here we go. All right.
Is it marked? So we'll move to admit.
A34 is admitted. Objection.
I simply haven't had enough opportunity to look at it to know if it's a draft, if it's final, is it... I'm just unfamiliar with the document. It's the first I've seen it. May I have a moment to peruse it?
We need an extra copy. If we had...
The URL is at the very bottom. She's trying to get to it on the web. Okay, so I shifted gears to the topic of housing. You had mentioned policy H519 as the genesis of the housing conditions. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. That policy is not in the neighborhood plans, is it? It's a citywide policy.
Yes.
Okay. Did SDCI conduct an independent analysis of the master plan's potential impact on housing affordability?
No.
Okay. You, in your testimony, you added a couple of exhibits, new ones, D26 and 27 in particular, which are the EIS, I understand, of the comprehensive plan. Is that right? The draft and final EIS?
Yes.
And the proposed action being analyzed in those plans was to amend the comprehensive plan. Is that right?
Yes.
Did the proposed action include contemplating amendments to the code governing major institution master plans?
I don't know.
Why don't you take a look on the first page of the draft EIS under proposed action? Tell me if it says in there one of the proposed actions being analyzed is amendments to the code regulating major institution master plans.
What page?
This is page Romanet I, the very first page, under proposed action.
Oops. There's nothing that specific about anything. No.
Okay. So there's nothing in there about amendments to the citywide development regulations, right?
Right.
And there's nothing in there about amendments to zoning, to either zoning or zoning standards. Right.
It says, city is considering text and map amendments to the comprehensive plan that may alter the distribution of projected growth, et cetera, et cetera.
Growth of 70,000 housing units and 115,000 jobs?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's citywide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in fact, since this has been, the comprehensive plan has been adopted, has the city amended the code provisions regulating major institution master plans as a result of policy H-519 or the comprehensive
plan? Not yet.
Okay. Has it amended any of the citywide development regulations as a result of the master plan? Or, sorry, not the master plan, the comprehensive plan. So many plans. Policy H-519?
With regard to that particular policy?
Correct.
No, because that's about major institution.
Okay, and has it amended any zoning codes or changed the zoning in any particular area as a result of policy H-519?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Are you aware of any instance in which the city has imposed that particular policy, H-519, as a condition on a major institution master plan?
I don't know.
Okay. That's all I have.
Mr. Wynn?
Nothing further for me. Thank you.
Thank you. There being nothing further that we're going to hear today, I guess we are going to adjourn for the day. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
And so we're starting with Ahmad tomorrow, and then Ed.
Oh, public testimony.
Public testimony.
And if I just may put in a plug on Mr. Gerard, says he has something he can't move at 10, so I'm hoping there won't be much public testimony. I'm wondering if I could just put in a plug now for if we need to perhaps pause public testimony to ensure we fit in about a half hour for him. I appreciate it.
All right, and what is the schedule for your witness that you still have tomorrow?
He won't need long at all, probably.
I mean, how long can he stay?
He has flexibility.
Okay.
He can stay longer.
All right, so it looks like there's a lot of public testimony. We should probably go first to your witness and then public testimony. Is that what you're asking?
I appreciate that, yes.
Okay, all right.
What we've noticed is that because our final two witnesses for SDCI will not be available until 1 o'clock, so we won't be done. I don't think university is ready to put on rebuttal witnesses. I don't know exactly how we can profitably fill the time, say, between 9:30 and 11:30.
Can I suggest, we've been talking about the Alliance needing another, I can't remember, was it 20 minutes or 22 minutes?
Mr. West is not here.
Mr. Roach, I don't know. Maybe we could fill it with that.
Mr. Roach, how much time do you need for your testimony?
20 minutes.
Okay. Can you do it tomorrow in the late morning?
I would prefer to do it after testimony of others, but if that's not possible.
Well, that's pretty much going to be after testimony of others. I mean, close to it. Is there a particular person that you want to be after?
What after any of the discussion on transportation?
Okay, well, we're going to have to try and fill up the time, and so it's going to be late morning tomorrow.
All right.
And
I will communicate with Mr. West about that.
Okay, thank you.
And then we'll have the little folks ready to go as soon as the city's through with its topics. So.
Okay.
Right, I anticipate the remaining city witnesses starting at 1 again with the public testimony. We're going to start a little early in the afternoon tomorrow, if I recall. We're going to break at 11:30 in the morning, start at 1, which is a little earlier.
Break for testimony from the public at 1:30 if necessary.
Correct.
Okay, and you were starting with who then?
Andrew Glass Hastings.
Okay.
And then Janet Scholl.
Okay.
That would be stunned together, they took more than an hour.
All right, and so none of that is on it is on transportation part of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Roger, do you want a copy or can you grab it off the internet?